Okay, good morning, everyone. This is the 13th of September, 2018, and we are continuing with A Treatise on White Magic, and this is our 53rd program for Rules for Magic on the Astral Plane, and it is our 37th program for Rule 10, which it's an amazingly large rule filled with all kinds of important information. We're not too far from the completion of Rule 10, and we're working on some preliminaries in esoteric astrology. This is what he wrote before he wrote his big book on esoteric astrology, the third volume of the Rays and the Initiations, and, well, he considered it to be his most occult book because it dealt entirely with the realm of energy. There have been so many deep things said already. He's talked about the simplicity of things, of course, and he's given us the basic meanings of the sun sign, which we call the sun of probability, and the rising sign, which we come call the potency of the sun of possibility, and the moon sign representing the past and the lunar lords and the general condition of the vehicles. So this is really worth rereading. He's told us that when we die in a certain sign, in a certain astrological month, we are reborn in that month, in our next incarnation. And an astrological month, as you know, is not the same as the normal calendar month. It usually begins around the, 19th, 20th, 21st, anywhere from the 19th to the 23rd of a month, depending upon which month we're talking about. So that's interesting. Then according to your birthday, you will know the sign in which you died, made your transition in the previous incarnation. So all of us want to cultivate our rising sign, bringing us closer to that which the supervising solar angel intends for this incarnation. And I'm sure as we grow in our consciousness, we on the higher planes participate in that choice as well. That's my impression. So let us then continue and see if we can finish off somehow here rule number 10. Rule 11 is no small matter either. It's about 60 pages long, and then we'll be finished with the rules for magic on the astral plane. Astrology, he says, now deals primarily with the personality for whom the horoscope may be cast and with the events of the personality life. I remember the contest between psychological astrologers and event oriented astrologers. Well, usually with any debate such as this, everybody has a piece of the truth, and I've found that event orientation is very useful in helping to rectify the horoscope. But when you want to really deal with the purpose of the incarnation, you have to get into the psycho-spiritual realm. So, although astrology is the greatest and oldest of all the sciences, it is still very much in its infancy as far as the way we are able to practice it. When through meditation and service, plus the discipline of the lunar body as a man comes consciously and definitely under his soul ray, then he comes as definitely under the influence of one or other of the seven solar systems as they focus their energy through one or other of the constellations, and subsequently one or other of the sacred planets. This is actually quite a deep statement, but we certainly see that what the requirements are, meditation, service, and discipline, we see that. But the question is, what are the seven solar systems? Well, from one perspective, our sun is a member of something that's called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And the soul ray is certainly tied in, not only with the heart of the sun of our own system, but probably, I would say, with the stars in these seven solar systems. But if we want to take it further and understand that the term solar systems is quite generic, then we're going to have to deal with seven systems of stars called constellations, which are the chakras of the super cosmic logos that we call the one about whom naught may be said. I'm calling it a super cosmic logos. DK uses terms like cosmic logos. I think that is applicable to each constellation. For instance, the constellation or the grouping of stars in which our sun plays the role of the heart center. But then there are a number of other such constellations, and the entity which ensouls them, I think, can rightfully be called a cosmic logos. And then on page 293 of Cosmic Fire, beyond the category of a cosmic logos, we have something called the unknown, and I think that is our local one about whom naught may be said, in which each one of these constellations is a chakra. So there seems anyway to be a lineup between seven major constellations in the one about whom naught may be said, and then our own cosmic logos, in which our solar logos is a heart chakra, and then our solar logos himself, as we've just learned that from the heart of the sun, the seven rays go forth. And then the seven rays is the, well, I won't call it the last stop, but it's, spiritually speaking, it's very important that each one of us is on one of those seven from the soul perspective. And, you know, if we wanted to take this even farther, I suppose we could go to the head centers in the one about whom naught may be said, and the Great Bear and its seven stars would be that particular series of head centers. And, you know, basically all of this is coming from the head centers of the supercosmic logos, and also from the zodiac of constellations, which he tells us at some point in Rays and the Initiations is the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. And all of this traces its way down to our soul ray. So when he says seven solar systems, you know, it's either got to be, so either the seven solar systems, let's see, how many of these do I need? Will that do it? Of which ours is one? Or the seven constellations, major, let's say major, of the one about whom naught may be said. Eventually, there will be 12 sacred planets corresponding to the 12 constellations, but the time is not yet. Let's just say, as a number, number of the, I wonder what's going on here. Why I can't get this. As a number of the non-veiled planets are still non-sacred. So, you know, we have Mars, we have the Earth, we have a planet veiled by the moon. I believe some people have called that planet Rex, meaning king, and there's been a statement made that Rex is the moon is the king of planets, something like that. So it may be an oblique reference to its veiling of Rex, and then there's a non-sacred planet veiled by the sun. Anyway, when these sort of veiled planets emerge, veiled and non-sacred planets emerge and come into a state of sacredness, then maybe we're going to have those 12 sacred planets. He says the time is not yet, and we have no idea when the time might be, because this involves long solar systemic timing. Our solar system, as you know, is one of seven. Okay? Seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Now, some people have, I think, mixed the constellational chakras with the solar logoic chakras. A solar logoic chakra is a much smaller thing. A constellational chakra is a much larger thing. A constellational chakra finds its place in such a being as a one about whom naught may be said, of which there are, I think, in our particular area of space, maybe 49. And a solar logoic chakra is a chakra within one of those, within a constellation, which is a chakra in a one about whom naught may be said. I mean, all these are just words. They help us get a picture of a larger cooperation of great entities. And at least it helps us get a sense of scale and scope. When a man has arrived at this point in evolution, birth months, mundane astrology, and the influences which play upon the form aspect become of less and less importance. I guess when he's coming under one of the seven solar systems, i.e., when the man is coming under the influence of one of the seven solar systems. All right, but that's a later stage, and maybe it means really that in our case that the soul ray begins to dominate all the other astrological factors found in the chart and all the other lower rays. The circle of solar systems affects paramountly the soul, and it becomes the focal point of spiritual energies. This is the problem of the soul on its own plane. Responsiveness to these types of energy, and of them, the personality is totally unaware. This is unaware. This is responsiveness to stellar sotologoic energies. So he does seem to be clarifying the matter. He does, in terms of gradation, if we're going to come into relationship with a solar logos, such as our own, at some point in our initiatory development, then it seems that the next greater entity to come in touch with is our own local ruler of the seven solar systems in which our solar logos is a chakra. And then only then come into relationship with that greater being that contains a number, maybe seven major cosmic logoi. Again, the chart on 293 will help us. And that's, you know, cosmic fire, and just, you know, make note of it. It's important in trying to get a picture. As we see, you know, Soto Logos has planetary schemes, or heavenly men as its centers or chakras, and cosmic logos has solar logoi as its chakras, and the unknown has cosmic logoi as its chakras. So the unknown here is pretty much a one about whom naught may be said, and you can see such a being, I think, on the charts that Master DK gives us. There, that triangle is, I believe, a one about whom naught may be said. Some might think that, wait, the big circles are one about, are ones about whom naught may be said, but I think that since this little triangle contains not only the stars of the Great Bear, but also our solar logos and its causal body, it shows that it contains more than simply one constellation. That being the case, we can infer that it contains seven major constellations. Well, you know, probably the kinds of things we're talking about now are not really even totally soluble by a very high initiates. So from our angle, it's just speculative, though interesting. So I think this statement, our solar system, as you know, is one of seven. I think it's a very important statement. And, you know, there's no way we're going to confirm all of this in our lifetime. And, but it has, enough hints have been given out to prompt some thinking along these lines. That much we can do. I mean, we haven't come close to dealing with the arms of galaxies, if they are subsidiary and sold by subsidiary galactic beings. We haven't come close to dealing with that type of logos, who is the informing life of a galaxy, yet alone a number of galaxies. That being who informs a number of galaxies, in which any galaxy is simply a chakra. So it's very big. And here we are sometimes wondering about why we get angry or lose our emotional poise. So, you know, the vision is great, but we have to confirm that we have mastered even a few things within our personal energy system. It makes me want to pause, of course, and just dwell on a number of these matters, but I suppose the question turns on the use of the word solar system. In a way, even a galaxy is a solar system. It's made up of a system of many, many stars. One about whom not may be said is a solar system in a way, and constellations are also systems of stars. Now, when we get down to those structures that just have one or two stars at their center, as the dual stars, I'm told, actually outnumber the single-starred systems, then we have what we normally call a solar system. Let's say one star and a number of attendant planets. Or two stars and a number of attendant planets, and maybe some systems don't even have planets. I mean, we have so much to learn, but right now we're trying to tread the path of discipleship and of initiation and come en rapport with the higher aspects of our own planet and come into greater relationship to our own planetary logos, and then we can be more concerned with some of the sacred logoi surrounding the Earth, like Venus and Mercury. When I say surrounding, I mean cooperating with. And maybe then we can begin to wonder what it's like to be a solar life. In a way, each one of the planets, or the logoi of the planets in our solar system, is a solar life. So from planetary lives, there's a very big jump, I think, to the next kingdom, which we call solar lives. In a way, Sanat Kumara must be a solar life because he's said to be a direct disciple of our solar logos. Well, okay, how far can we take this? And how profitable is it for us to think of these things? Not that we should dismiss thinking about them, because they're difficult. It's just that we can only give so much time to them, and then maybe at a certain point, the intuition will speak and more will be revealed. But the soul on its own plane, in a way, is a solar angel and has already been a full human being and has been trained in the next hierarchy above that of the human monads, and it's they who are responsive to the energies of the seven solar systems. So, it's the solar angels who are responsive to the seven major solar logoi, of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. The signs which fall, therefore, into the four categories. Now he goes back and forth between the words constellations and signs, and I think that this alternation between the words constellations and signs can be used as a blind, and we have to know which he's talking about at the time. It's not that he holds to a rigorous exactitude about these matters. The signs which fall, therefore, into the four categories of earth, water, fire, and air, and there he's giving us these in the order of their frequency. These are presented in the order of their frequency and reflect the rising planes, because Earth is of the etheric physical plane, water of the astral plane, fire of the mental plane, and air, in this case, of the Buddhic plane, although it has its own relation as well to the etheric level. They concern primarily the man who lives below the diaphragm. He's prompted primarily by the solar plexus the sacral center and certain functions, sustaining functions, survival functions in the base of the spine center, plus the spleen, and I guess we're all dependent for vitality upon the splenic center. So the signs, they're falling into four categories of the four elements. Live below the diaphragm and utilize the lower four centers, and he goes in a different order: the base of the spine, sacral center, solar plexus, and the spleen. The inner group of seven major or systemic energies coming from the heart of the sun, in approximate way, have to do with the soul rays. And the source of these rays is not the heart of the sun. It may be the immediate source for us. I'd have to study or restudy the four different types of causes. Were they from maybe Aristotle? But it's an immediate and effective cause. These seven rays coming from the heart of the sun. Okay, so the inner group of seven major or systemic energies produce their effect upon the man who is living above the diaphragm and work through the seven representative centers in the head. Ruled by Vulcan. Justice for the one about whom naught may be said. They are ruled by the Great Bear. There's the definite connection there between Vulcan, the Great Bear, and Leo. We can only imagine what the Tibetan has been studying, lo, these many years, and the access that he has had to sources which clarify these matters and which are so entirely new to us, given the kind of astrology we had been studying. So maybe this word signs, it may be correct, instead of constellations. I'll just put it as a question mark. Whoop. Why is it that this always jumps? Maybe something about desensitizing the sort of mouse, built-in mouse pad. Okay, so they concern the man who lives below the diaphragm. So the four lower elements have particular relation to the one living below the diaphragm. There are other elements, ether, aether, akasha, you know, other elements, and if we were to turn to one of the charts here, we would see them. Ether, and this would be, well, actually, sometimes this one is called aether. Here it's called water, but the atmic level is related to the aether, and the monadic to the akasha. I'm not exactly sure what element we would refer to for the logoic plane, but the lower elements are earth, water, fire, and air. Air being quite pivotal because it's related to the Buddhic level, which is the fourth or central level here on the cosmic physical plane. Okay. So the inner group of seven major or systemic energies produce their effect upon the man who is living above the diaphragm. You know, let's just say the disciple, the initiate, with the aspirant torn between, and work through the seven representative centers in the head. Now, probably if you count up all the centers related to the head, major centers, you're going to find 21, I suspect. Or maybe 21 will be the entirety of the major chakras in the energy system. Because you'll have seven in the head, and you'll also have some centers, maybe seven above the head. That's what we'll have. And when DK was asked by Roberto Sociolli to explain some of this, he said, look, it's a mystery, it's very occult, it cannot be at this time revealed, although other Hindu books do purport to get into the structure of various centers that we've not heard much about at all and seem to be related to the spiritual triad. They get into such things extensively. If I may just deviate for a moment. Let's see, where would I find those? There. It's there's a monastic center, a Buddhic center, a Mahananda or Mahanada center, a Nirvanic center, and so forth. And so chakras that we've not heard of at all, with symbols we've not heard of or seen, and with enumerations of petals that are new to us. And I wonder, it's called the Ajna system, I wonder how we could put all that together in a meaningful way without getting confused. But at least maybe it's enough to know that there are centers within the head, and there are centers, I think, above the head, and the Tibetan headwear, you know, which shows kind of a feathered arch above the head, may obliquely indicate that series of centers. So maybe 21 is a very important number. Seven major in the body, seven in the head, and seven above the head. This is, of course, at this point, just speculation without any kind of detailed confirmation possible. So four of them focus through the throat center, the heart center, the ajna, and head centers. And three are latent in the region of the head, the thousand-petaled lotus, and only enter into activity after the third initiation. So there's some things here about the chakra system, which, if we are careful to note, may carry new revelation to us. The inner group of seven major or systemic energies produce an effect upon the man who is living above the diaphragm and work through the seven representative centers in the head. And in one of the rules, there are seven above and seven below. I may have called that to our attention, but we can kind of see it in the beginning of the rays and the initiations. Would it be, which would it be? Is it number 8? Yeah, here it is. When the disciple nears the portal, the greater seven must awaken and bring forth response from the lesser seven upon the double circle, and we begin to wonder if it's not really given the other latent chakras, mysterious chakras, a triple circle. So that's number eight of the rules for applicants. So four of these centers in the head focus through the throat, the heart, the ajna, and the head centers. Okay, these are the focus of the centers in the head. Three are held latent in the region of the head centers. Now notice there's a plural there, even though it's just called the thousand-petaled lotus. And the head center probably does have three parts. The numerology here works out and come only into functioning activity after the third initiation. Three latent, hidden, mysterious centers and the third initiation is the head center. Divided into three parts. The many petals, the 12 central petals, and the jewel at the heart of the 12. At the heart of the 12. So we can see, you know, what a curriculum it would be to really look into this head center, into its numerology, into the functions of each of the parts. Sometimes we see those pictures of the Buddha and his head is covered by many coils, which each of them represent a particular potency which he has mastered and which is occultly found within the head and is the root of all representation in the rest of the body. Representation of those functions in the rest of the body. Like within the seven centers in the head, there is a kind of heart center which is correlated with the normal heart center, and so forth for the other centers. It will be evident, therefore, how complicated from the standpoint of the horoscope as well as of the individual problem is this meeting of the energies of two types of constellations in the case of the man who is neither purely human nor purely spiritual. Now, I'm calling that the aspirant, and I think I should add to that the disciple, because the disciple, too, up to a certain point, is torn between these two factors. So we have zodiacal constellations, and well, here he uses the word constellations, and stars within the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, or constellations, which are the prototypes of those seven stars, of which our star or logos is one. So let's just say that from one perspective, there's a man living below the diaphragm. He's responding to a certain type of energy from the zodiac of signs and of constellations. And then there is the man who is responding to the seven. It's more along the ray line. It has to do with the seven solar logoi in the cosmic logos, in which our sun is the center, and it has to do with the prototypes of those seven stars, which themselves are constellations or chakras within the one about whom naught may be said. So there's a conflict there between the rays and some ordinary astrological meanings of the constellations. Now, sometimes if we go into esoteric astrology, we will see that the zodiacal constellations are certainly not limited to this low function. And maybe we, you know, and the signs, of course, are receiving areas attuned to the constellations. They are receiving and distributing areas of Devic substance. But sometimes the constellations are related to the soul level, and sometimes even to the monadic level. And this I've covered or discussed, I can only say somewhere, you know, on the appropriate page when I was going through esoteric astrology, page by page. Anyway, DK is telling us don't place too much faith in the ordinary horoscope because it is negated under these circumstances. The individual, in a way, is living neither in the zodiac of 12 or the zodiac of 10. The zodiac of 10 has, together they make 22, it has more to do with what's going on within the one about whom naught may be said. And the other zodiac is also in that great being as a heart in the head center, but it is, it has its own extensive province and is generally lower. Now, what I think is probably wise to do is to look at the particular status of the individual more or less and realize that all these 19 or even 22 energies are going to be very important and will be used according to the type of individual we're dealing with, or group or nation. So we'll blend in a way the 12 and the 7 and the 3, and we will not be too discriminative about their hierarchicalization as if one were necessarily higher than the other. We'll take them all and use them all according to the stage of evolution in which we find ourselves. The horoscope is not yet, not possible as yet, of delineation. Let's call it, you know, this this higher type of horoscope. The only horoscope which is basically, and this higher type of horoscope for an individual who is responding to the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and even to an additional three constellations. The horoscope of 10, the horoscope of 12. 10 is a human number, and 12 is a Devic number, just the way we might say that 5 is a more human number, the man number, and 6 is a more Devic number. So we have 11 from the combination of 5 and 6, and 22 from the combination of 10 and 12. And eventually, man and Deva must be put together, as is the case, for a planetary logos. It has become a divine Hermes Aphrodite, a divine hermaphrodite, with Hermes representing the man part, and Aphrodite the Devic part. So eventually there has to be a synthesis of these, and on the Buddhic plane, that harmonious approach really begins. And by the time we reach the monadic plane, there is a kind of a unity which I don't think we can describe, but there are human and deva monads in each one of the major circles or spheres found upon the monadic plane. Anyway, when we take these ray factors into consideration, the ordinary horoscope is negated. The horoscope there is not yet possible of delineation. How do we work the rays into the horoscope, and how do we work certain constellations which are their source into the horoscope? The only horoscope which is basically and almost infallibly correct is that of the entirely low-grade human being who lives entirely below the diaphragm and is governed by his animal nature alone, and, you know, probably people of our type. I'm not going to have so much contact with such people. They probably wouldn't be interested in astrology. And in any case, one has to serve as best one can. Okay, so we were talking about an infallibly correct horoscope for a low-grade human being who lives entirely below the diaphragm. The soul ray factor has not entered in any conscious way. Okay. Well, basically, you know, this is a book given before he wrote the big book on the subject, but it has foundations which, you know, the Tibetan tends generally not to repeat himself. And if he does, it always comes in from a different and more illuminative angle. So, we're learning things here, or we're fixing in our mind certain things here which we have to carry through as we read the larger book. But we do see that it's not just a question of considering what the zodiac and its rulers are telling us. It's a question of other constellations, which are the bodies of cosmic logoi within the one about whom Nop Ebi said, which are tied in with the cosmic logos of which our sun is a heart center. And that those seven ray energies, and maybe three even somehow beyond that, because, you know, we have 19 energies, 12 plus 7, and also we have to reach the number 22, and I think we do. How we do that, I'm not sure, because in a way, if we look at Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, they each have a ray quality which they dispense to the cosmic logos of which our solar logos is a part. Great Bear, first ray, Sirius, Little Bear, second ray, and the Pleiades, generally third ray. As to what are the rays of the Pleiades, they have a very powerful third ray, which may be the fundamental ray, the great ray, but they also have a great cosmic buddhi, or second ray, which they receive from the dragon of all things. So, you know, these big constellations, they do have more than one ray. And when you look at the Pleiades, you wonder how the Draco the dragon can be the source of anything for them, because the Pleiades seem to be the most important center within the one about whom not maybe said, maybe representing all the Pleiades, the higher head center. So, you know, what I'm doing is laying out for myself and for us just unanswered questions. Questions that will have to be addressed as we know more, that's all. To address them and pretend that there's any certainty about this is mental pride, I'm afraid, and will not work. Okay, continuing. I seem to get these phone calls, sorry. So anyway, it's difficult to delineate a horoscope which applies to all kinds of people. There are other factors that have to be taken into consideration, really many factors. Even the 115 plus planets, not to mention the asteroids as well. So, okay, there's a lot going on. Astrologers must remember also that there are several, at one point he says 115 or more, unless that number summing to seven carries some other meaning. There are several undiscovered planets which are producing pulls and shifts and focusing streams of energy upon our Earth, which tend to complicate the problem still further. Now, this is telling us something about when this was written, because the masters are not allowed to call attention to certain discoveries which humanity itself must make. And Pluto was discovered, maybe rediscovered, in 1930. In 1915, apparently it was photographed but not recognized. So anyway, among these undiscovered planets, we have, or maybe just recently discovered at that time, Pluto is numbered. Pluto is one of them, and having now emerged into manifestation, or rather into recognition. So we know here that this much was written after 1930, or, you know, after Pluto had emerged. I'd have to check the exact date of its discovery. To it will be assigned all the unexplained conditions, and a number of others have now been discovered in the neighborhood of Pluto as well, and there are a number of hypothesized planets from the work of the German astrologer Witte. He was in the First World War, and he was noticing certain effects, and on that basis, he hypothesized some eight, are they called Uranian planets or trans-Neptunian planets. Pluto will be made the scapegoat for faulty astrology for a long time to come. This chart failed to work and be true because Pluto must be influential in it, and we know little about Pluto. So DK is telling us the problem when we're not playing with a full deck here, you know. Well, we're playing with far, far from a full deck. And so the story will run. Yet Pluto has always been revolving around our sun and producing its effects, and let's just say duly noted in mythology, both Greek and Roman, and probably well before that in other traditions. It governs, however, the death or cessation of old ideas and emotions. And its influence is therefore largely cerebral. Okay, so let's just say, thus linking it with the mind when the non-sacred planets are considered, and Mars, I suppose, with the astral body. And in that you have the clue to its late discovery, because man only became sufficiently cerebral to notice the perturbations in the orbit of Neptune, and then begin to look for perhaps a source causing them. Mankind is only on the verge of becoming mental, so its effects are felt first in the mental body, you know. And we're told about how the time to drop the vehicle, physical vehicle, has come, and then the mind seizes upon that impulse from the soul and then repeats the word, you know, the word of death. Goes forth, if we were to look here at esoteric healing, then repeats, and maybe, yeah. Okay, the word goes forth that form has served its purpose. That's from the soul, that word goes forth. The principle of mind then organizes itself and then repeats the word. The waiting form responds and drops away. The soul stands free. So we see Pluto, the planet of death, Pluto being cerebral, the mind repeating that word of death. All these things fit together. Okay. So its effects are first felt in the mental body. The mind repeats the word of death coming from the sun or soul. The names of the planets are not the result of arbitrary choice, but the planets name themselves. Now that has to be one of those statements that people who are far from occult thought will ridicule. After all, the planets are just a bunch of dirt in the sky, right? A bunch of rocks and other elements, various elements. So how can they be said to name themselves? So the prevailing thought goes, but the occultist sees it differently. Every vehicle being informed by a great intelligence, a planetary logos. All right. So this is interesting. The let's just say this is all about the mental effect of Pluto. Now we do see that it comes down and operates in other areas, and the disappearing of certain energies into the smoke of Hades, you know. That's in esoteric astrology, so we know that it has something to do with the astral body. Maybe there's nothing there under Hades. Maybe not. But maybe Pluto. Smoke. Well, all right, two of the non-sacred planets, Mars and Pluto, function in connection with the sacral center. that's Mars, and the solar plexus, Pluto. That's a very interesting connection, because Mars also has that solar plexus connection. But as I've said, more than one planet can be involved with a chakra. This latter planet becomes active in the life of the man who is becoming alive in the higher sense. His lower, and this is it, his lower nature passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto, who governs the lesser burning ground in order that a man may live in truth in the higher land of light. So Pluto, base of the spine, Pluto, solar plexus, those are two that one can see Pluto related to quite logically. His lower nature passes into the smoke and darkness of Pluto, who governs the lesser burning ground. There is a greater, of course. Uranus is more connected with that greater burning ground. In order that a man may live in truth in the higher land of light. And so the obstacles disappear through a process we call death. And much of this is a cerebral process. Astrologers will eventually find it necessary to cast three horoscopes, one purely physical, dealing with the body nature, one primarily emotional, and dealing with the quality of the personality and with its sensitivity or state of awareness, and the third will be the chart of the mental impulses. So maybe Charles Jane had something there with the 3ABC charts. Animation. Well, they're not in order, right? Birth. Animation, birth, and conception. Now, really, it would be CAB if it were in order. But let's just say, keeping the order given here, we have Neptune, Saturn, and Uranus. And I suppose what would happen if we put each of them on the ascendant of an individual's chart. Maybe we would learn then something about these three horoscopes. There's just so much we don't know, unfortunately, but I have, you know, the faith that since astrology was mentioned in one of those statements about the year 2025 and the new writing coming forth at that time, that there will certainly be an expansion of the astrological teaching. And we will be able to apply it even more successfully in an esoteric manner. It will be found that these three charts will take certain geometrical lines, and the lines of energies will form patterns. Now you kind of wonder, how did he do it? He said, black squares, Saturn, and yellow triangles, yellow stars, probably Mercury, and blue triangles, maybe Uranus. There's not an exact lineup there, but he talks about geometrical superimposition of squares, stars, and triangles, squares, material, stars, consciousness, triangles, spirit. These three charts are superimposed upon one another and will give the personality diagram the individual life pattern. I think we're working very much in the dark compared to what the great astrologers can really see. Amazing, amazing. And if he's not given to overstatement. That's the thing about Master DK. He doesn't exaggerate. amazing symbolic charts and lineal forms will be found to emerge when this is done. And the geometry of the individual will grow out of this, for it will be found that each line will function in relation to another line, and the trend of the life energies will become apparent. All of this is promised for the future, and we will be participating in the reception and utilization of these charts. Eventually, even in this department of knowledge, the star will shine forth as if it's been much occluded, much occulted in the old sense, hidden. This will constitute a new branch of psychology, and its true exponent for our age will be duly found. But I indicate the lines of the future astrology in order to safeguard the present. I would indicate the lines of the future astrology in order to safeguard the present. Now, I think somehow we have managed to do about an hour here. And I'll reset my chronometer. Resetting the chronometer in the hope that it will persist and not do funny things. If I receive a call, everything is set back to zero. So maybe if I had more fifth ray, I'd know how to deal with that. But right now, approximation is the best I can offer. So there's a lot of development in esoteric astrology, which is slated to take place. And we can't be too proud about our present astrology. It's good, but it doesn't amount to much yet. And we'll be able to clarify our own path in life through these new developments and help others clarify their path. And this is all part of the divine plan, the intelligent approach to one's purpose, we might say. So here in A Treatise on White Magic, fundamentals are being offered, fundamentals. And we see how he developed those in the astrology book written later. You know, none of this would be available to us. We'd still be pursuing the old astrology with the old limitations and the astrology of the soul, or at least of the soul working through the personality, would be unknown to us. So we have to be very grateful to the light bearers, the senior light bearers, the givers of light, and their intentions to raise humanity. We have benefited greatly. Imagine no Blavatsky, imagine no Alice Bailey or Elena Rorick, imagine no DK doing his work, or with Master KH behind the scenes on that one, and or Master Moria. Master Moria and KH, they really wanted humanity to have more of the ageless wisdom. They really promoted that idea, and maybe some of the other masters, being a little more conservative, were against it. But they were allowed to try their experiment, and that experiment is still in process. One thing astrologers need at this time to do, I'm going to just put this in 1 hour. One thing astrologers need at this time to do, and that is to make due allowance for the transition period out of Pisces into Aquarius. It's kind of an unsettled time with the counterflows of Aquarius and Pisces, causing turbulence, I guess I can call it. This is seldom done, but it is evident that the tremendous turmoil incident to these transitions affect the individual chart and frequently offsets individual destiny or karma. So sometimes we think that our chart is set in stone and will work out no matter what, but there are other larger charts at play, and we are parts of the we are constituents in these larger wholes for which those larger charts delineate. People are submerged in planetary and racial destinies, and their own tiny affairs are offset almost entirely and sometimes completely negated. I was thinking of all those people swept up in World War II. Some kind of mass karma involved there. And their normal chart potentials were negated in the larger patterns which were being imposed upon them. It is not possible to cast the horoscope of the planet, and I guess accept members of the astrological STR department may be able to do so if a master or beyond, and those who propose to do so are deceiving themselves and others. The horoscope of the fourth kingdom in nature of humanity will eventually be cast, but it will be done by initiates. So maybe we can say that the chart of the planet, well, it already exists, you know, in a way. It can't be done on the outer planes, but it will be done by masters and chohans and those with very, very high planetary knowledge. And the charts of humanity and maybe other kingdoms of nature will be done by initiates. And there are no initiate astrologers working on the physical plane at this time. I wonder how some of those who may have thought of themselves as initiate astrologers felt about that very declarative remark. Well, a lot of time has passed, so it's possible that a number of people will say, use the old formula, well, that was then and this is now, and enough time has passed so that initiate astrologers can be working again, and I'm one of them. Okay, let's see, as they say, by their fruits you shall know them. One hint here I give. The sun was in Sagittarius when the first human tendencies struggled to the fore. And I'm saying here, I guess I'm the one who's saying it, animal man aspired. Because it has the brackets around it, I suspect that it's something I wrote in there. And the coming of the solar angels was not independent of the aspiration of animal man. We find the elevation of emotion even in some of the advanced animals. It may not be aspiration as we recognize it, but it's a higher type of yearning. It does seem to be evident. I often refer to this particular chapter and this place. The sun was in Sagittarius And No, it'll be in white magic. That's where it will be. Okay, let's see what we get here. There are two of those. Right. We are not finding the words that were in the brackets, so obviously I put them there. I just want to be able to discriminate between what DK has written and what I've inserted as a commentary. Well-meaning, anyway. The stage of Animal Man was completed when Sagittarius was dominant from our planetary standpoint, and I'm using words with care. Was this a precessional age in Sagittarius, or an even longer period, but maybe 2,100 years was enough? The great event of individualization took place, we would say, for Earth, humanity. But the brain of the human being failed to register what had happened. And we have been studying the sequence of soul, mind, brain, and how it becomes necessary through meditation and service and purification to enlist the brain in the sequence. So registration of the inner events can occur. There's so much more in the mind than is in the brain, and so much more in the soul than is in the mind. That seems to be a couple of statements which are true. But the brain failed to register what happened. So now, this is an important, you know how it is. Gemini represents the human side, Sagittarius, the animal side. The animal side, Sagittarius, aspires towards the human side. And both are interesting because those are the only two signs in which the Earth finds itself as a ruler, esoterically in Sagittarius and hierarchically in Gemini. Although associated with Taurus, we are told, and also associated with Sirius, a great being, but somehow the Earth is considered. All right. So here comes an important quotation and very evocative. The sons of God shot forth like arrows from the bow. And what this could be is the representation of the solar angel. We cannot, at least I cannot yet find that the entirety of the solar angel lodges itself in the egoic lotus on the higher mental plane. I think a portion of solar angelic energy and presence and consciousness lodges itself there and in the vicinity of the mental unit and even in the brain and in the brain. And maybe in relation to the heart also. The sons of God shot forth like arrows from the bow. The forms of animal man, received the impulse, and lo, a god was born. The tiny babe knew not the great event. A god was born. Individualization. And the tiny babe knew not the great event, and no brain registration. But many things happen above that are not accounted for or cognized below. Now, you know, DK tells us that we're quite active at night and we fail to remember the great majority of it, but we're active, let's say we are disciples, we're active in the line of the hierarchy. We're cooperating and we're pursuing what is of interest to us and what is of value to the divine plan. And we may not bring all of that experience through into the physical brain, but it will show up in terms of interests which we feel we simply must pursue. And I'm sure we all have that inner sense, this I must do, and it may be very closely related to hierarchical activity pursued in another dimension. Namely, the majority of it being in the astral plane. So this is shooting forth like arrows from a bow. It reminds me, of a solar angel shooting forth a fragment of itself, which lodges on the higher mental plane, also near the mental unit, also in the etheric brain. In the region of the pineal gland. And isn't the language interesting? Now, you know, there's a scientific approach to interpreting this kind of language, but it's given in more poetic form. And yet it's all there. A god is born when soul consciousness and presence is implanted in the usual energy system of man, the lower part of the energy system. Man as a god already existed as a monad, really. I mean, St. Paul saying, know ye not that ye are gods. Well, that's very radical. How many Christians today accept that idea and its implications? What really has to be done is that many hard sayings have to be brought together, and it has to be seen how the standard interpretation of Christianity does not resolve them, but how the ageless wisdom does resolve the contradictions without negating the major theses of the divinity of the Christ. I've often thought to myself, well, we've got a vast universe, which is just an infinitesimal anyway, and you're going to take one little being, a great being, but a little being, who emerged through individualization out of the animal kingdom and developed over many millennia and even millions of years into a great, great being of love, and you're going to take that being and make him the one and only Son of God for the entire universe? You know, it seems to me we have myopia going there, and a very great problem with scale. Probably every humanity on every planet has its own savior or a series of saviors. And there are probably local cosmic Christs who express the second aspect of divinity, and a great universal Christ a great universal Christ related to the one and only universal logos at the time of the expression of any universe, of which there have always been an infinitude. And so it's just not proportionate to say that Christ, as great as he is, as amazing as he is, as, you know, far beyond the normal human thought and feeling as he is, can be the only Son of God for the entire universe. You know, but scale is a big problem, and a sense of proportion. And as people continue to study and meditate and serve, the whole scale problem will come more and more into adjustment. So anyway, the solar angels were involved here in this Sagittarian shooting forth, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain, and maybe that fragment was shut forth by the will of the solar angel, seeking its anchorage in a lower and upcoming being. And that arrow is the presence of the guiding light and love and sacrificial will, which hovers over the man for millions of years, even though at first maybe there's not so much of a direct solar angelic supervision, because other aspects of divinity, as DK tells us, take care of the earlier part of evolution. Anyway, this shooting forth, this took place 21 million years ago. Cycles passed. What kind of cycles? One day we have to know, when we attain all knowledge on the atmic plane, at least all knowledge of the, our globe process, let's say, and eventually our chain process and scheme process, eventually. Cycles passed, and when at a later date the sun was in Leo, approximately 18 million years ago, and plus one half, the first instances of coordination between the brain and mind took place, and the human being was definitely self-conscious. This self-consciousness didn't occur suddenly with the shooting forth of the arrow of presence, the arrow of the solar angelic consciousness, not immediately. So we're talking about 3 million year period, or at least 2.5 million years. He registered his individuality with the help of implanted Venusian I-ness, this quality of self-reflection, a quality of self-reflection implanted in the solar angelic substance. Shot forth. Well, that's a long time, isn't it? I mean, we look at a century as if it's a long time. Well, sometimes I look back, you know, and I say, well, okay, I'm 75 now. Well, where did that time go? How did I arrive at this point? But now, it seems like a long time, which is a short time. All times are equal, actually, in comparison with absolute infinitude or eternal duration, but that's another matter. But now we're talking about millions of years. We think it was a long time ago that the Christ appeared through Jesus in Palestine, a long time ago. And it was, and a number of incarnations have passed. And in the registration of our experience, it seems of great duration, but now we're talking about millions of years. Whether 3 million or, you know, we're rounding off because it doesn't make any sense to be too specific, although a very specific number is coming. The figures for the first date, though exactness is in a system of mutation such as ours, though exactness is not possible in a system of mutation such as ours, is 21,688,345 years ago, so we have to know when this was written. Okay, so when okay. When exactly was this written or typed? And that has not to do with proofreading and later publishing and all that, sometime in the 30s, you know. But there's a chance also that there is symbolism in these figures. I know some people have tried to take the figure and work with it, and I think we maybe have profited a little from that type of work, but there is no assurance. The figures for the first date, when the sons of God shot forth like arrows from a bow, is given in apparently an exacting manner. And yet in the very same sentence, it says exactness is not possible. So we also have to watch for the possible symbolic meaning here. When I look at 3, 4, 5, I certainly think of the rays of Mercury. All of them are there included. I'm not sure quite what to make of 6, 8, 8, and 21 always is a number in occultism of completion with the 3 sevenfold cycles involved, yielding 22 when the entirety is considered a unit. So much work can be done on this, and has been done by those who have quite a good knowledge of it. But always be careful as you read, because no dogmatism is at all possible here. Everything is moving all the time. And he says we live in a system of mutation. A solar system of mutation, or a larger system of mutation, including the interplay that's going on within constellations and soul by cosmic logoi and beyond. These figures are useless at this time, for they can neither be proved correct or incorrect. And, you know, the path of proportion and humility will confirm that thought. Who can prove this? And then we'd have to, I mean, I think we can anchor the moment when this particular sentence was written. I think there are records of that somewhere, because Alice Bailey would have given the date, I think. And somewhere there must have been the intention to save these important seminal writings in the form that they were taken down. But overall, the figures cannot really be used at this time. Watch everything that is said. Because at this time tells you that maybe later they might be usable. And can neither be proved correct or incorrect. Investigation will prove their usefulness when the nature of time is better understood. Correct nor incorrect. Let's just see what's going on there. Later, investigation will prove their usefulness, and when time is better understood. Okay, later investigation. Let's see if we have that. The word later has been left out. Later investigation will prove their usefulness when the nature of time is better understood. Sagittarius governs evolution, for it symbolizes progress towards a conscious goal. That makes sense, doesn't it? Leo governs the human consciousness in the human kingdom, for the energy pouring through it enables man to say, I am. And we will say, and also through Venus and from the solar angel. The energy which makes the recognition of Inus possible comes from all three of these sources. Leo, okay, all three of these sources, Leo, Venus, and the solar angel. Well, this is a big history, and we're only now waking up to a much truer history of humanity and of us individually, something we hardly would suspect, but which gives us hope and courage and incentive to shoot forward so that we can see the goal. I see the goal so that we can reach the goal and then see another until finally the goal for the human being is reached, and then there's entirely new creative hierarchy experiences which lie ahead, because it's not forever that such as we are, emanations of a monad, will be members of the human creative hierarchy. They're just the way the present solar angels are members of the fifth creative hierarchy. It was not so in the past when they were human beings in the previous major solar system. It might be of value if I here attempted a translation, necessarily inadequate, of the, that's something we, maybe we overlook, that DK says, say it's inadequate, of the key words of each sign. And these are the spiritual and evolutionary approaches. The evolutionary are lower, and the spiritual indicate a certain point of attainment and the realization that comes with it. These fall into two categories as far, I guess it is, far as humanity is concerned. And I wonder about other kingdoms, you know. There is the key word to the form aspect and the key word for the soul aspect. Early experience and later experience. Yeah. And we're very familiar with these, and I've gone over them in my analysis or commentary of esoteric astrology. So probably no need to be excessively detailed about this now. In the first case, the word is expressed. Expressed. The word. And in the second case, it is consciously spoken by the soul, so that when we're giving the mantram in the second case, we should be as if we are the soul. Translated into modern terms, much is lost, but the underlying thought which directs the work of the emanating energies is of value, directs the work. And for our world period, I guess our round, because there are other and higher ways of interpreting, they are as follows. Okay, for there are other and higher ways of interpreting. Later. Okay, so the aspirant who progresses from Aries to Pisces and has therefore reoriented himself, you know, we call it he has reversed the wheel, has reversed or is reversing the wheel. Sometimes, of course, you're caught in the countercurrent, just as we were between the greater constellations and then the zodiacal constellations. Of course, you know, if you think about it, our zodiacal constellations are the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. And what could be a higher position than that when that 12-petaled lotus is considered to be major center in the head of man? What could be higher? And yet, the ray constellations are other than that. And through the ray constellations, or from the ray constellations, the ray is transmitted through the zodiac. So let's say, for instance, that the Great Bear is a ray constellation transmitting the first ray. Well, the way we would think of this is that the first ray then passes through the zodiacal constellations of Aries, Leo, and Capricorn. But when you think about the human anatomy, you would think that, okay, this heart within the head has certain qualities, and the energies from it would pass through the seven centers in the head. And maybe we can think of, well, I don't know exactly how we would think of the constellations through which the cosmic logoi work. Are they part of the normal energy system of the one about whom naught may be said, or are they found in the head? We have to look for analogies there, because in the human being you have the chakras of the normal energy system. You have the greater seven found in the head, and then you have probably a still higher septinate above the head and relating very much to the highest head center. Now, what if the one about whom not may be said has that kind of setup? In any case, there is a relation. The constellations in the heart and the head of the one about whom not may be said, which distribute the first ray, are Aries, Leo, and Capricorn, and they transmit it, and they have to get it from somewhere. And the major first ray constellation seems to be the Great Bear, so do they get it from the Great Bear? And if they do, what is the position of the Great Bear in the anatomy of the one about whom naught may be said? Well, obviously, all we can do is sort of pose the issue, pose the problem. We're not going to solve this. But we can notice where the analogies, or this particular analogy between man's structure and the structure of the one about whom naught may be said, where there is deviation or not an exact one-to-one correspondence, seemingly. So anyway, DK is looking at something here that is old symbols. Much is lost. Translation is necessarily inadequate. But at least there is the directing of the work. The underlying thought which directs the work of each constellation is somewhat understood and somewhat here of value. As I said, I've actually spent quite a bit of time working over these things, and I wonder, it's probably not so profitable to do it, but you know, Aries, from whence are you coming forth? I come forth, and from the plane of mind I rule, and I assume it's the higher mind, and in a way Aries is associated with the monad. I don't think I've ever mentioned that. And the monad does descend, as you see, there it is, straight down. I, the monad, come forth, and from the plane of mind, right in the jewel in the lotus, I rule. Now, another way of doing it is that the soul comes forth at a certain point of evolution and rules the, affects the lower mind, which is held steady in the light, and rules the lower three vehicles of astral, etheric, and dense physical. But there is a big archetype here in the sea of fire, a big purpose, and rulership is needed to make sure that that purpose is expressed. Taurus is the mother of illumination. I see, and when the eye is opened, all is illumined. There are many eyes, and DK goes over them. There is the third eye, but there's also something different called the eye of the soul. And that's pretty occult, and it's not much referenced, and maybe it has a different location than the etheric area around the pineal gland. You see, I know that I did this material quite extensively. I might say something else at this time, but I think it's sufficient to just say a few things. We certainly have to open the third eye, but we have to also be able to use the eye of the soul. And there are many focal points of energy which can, through which one can see. In a way, the whole egoic lotus is an eye. In a way, the Every vehicle is an I, the three vehicles of the triad, because you can perceive and see through them in a specialized way. And further, the monad itself is an I, as we are told in one of the analogies in the points of revelation. I guess we'd have to go then to discipleship and monad, I, and let's see, the logos, planetary. Maybe this is more or less what we're looking for. The monad is to the planetary logos what the third eye is to man. So the monad, you know, the third eye is etheric in man. It's an area around the pineal gland and the etheric pineal. And we have to consider that the cosmic ethers, the monad is located in the cosmic ethers, and so is located maybe in the etheric brain of the planetary logos. Etheric brain and an etheric pineal representation. So Dina 2, page 291, he spells this out in several ways. Okay. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. So a third degree initiate can focus within the causal body and see what he used to identify as his personal self or as his real self, and his present position is becoming more and more illumined, and it does seem that what he used to believe to be himself is waning in its appeal and its effectiveness, even in its light value in contrast to the increasing light of the soul. But I guess, you know, you can say this even for the monad. I, in the monad, as the monad, recognize the triadally infused personality as my other self, and that too must wane in the growing light of the monad. I build a lighted house, you know, obviously, you could write a whole chapter on each one of these, but I'm having the faith that over the number of years that I worked on the presentation of the esoteric astrology book, that I did something which was more complete than I'm doing now. I build a lighted house and therein dwell. Who is the builder? What is the house? There is the tabernacle in the wilderness, the normally unattractive, unstable personality, but it can become illumined by the light of the soul, and we're working on that all the time. Also, I build Solomon's temple on the higher mental plane, and I learn at the third degree to enter the causal body rather than find my center, let's say, in the lower mind, within the personality, you know, around the area of the mental unit. Now, what about the temple of Ezekiel? I mean, every one of these temples will be destroyed once they reach their full quota of radiation. So, am I also, as well as building the glorious causal body, which is destroyed at the fourth degree, am I also building the temple of Ezekiel in some manner not yet discussed, but it is apparently a 12-fold temple, and for a while therein I dwell, and The other self is found in all the energy system factors on the lower five planes in the worlds of Brahma. And if truth be told, and there seems to be a hint that appeared in some papers where a kind of a temple is existing on the third subplane, perhaps, or maybe the second, of the atmic plane, then it has to be destroyed before there can be a full entry into the monadic realization and vision. So we're working potentially on different areas of illumination, possible illumination. And we have to decide, you know, maybe in our ordinary discipleship work, we are illumining both the personality and building the light content of the causal body. Now, there are other vehicles in which perhaps we can focus, and they are triadal vehicles, and we have to coordinate them because they're not immediately coordinated. I mean, around the time of the third initiation, we can coordinate something that will become the monastic vehicle. We call it the abstract mind, and when the egoic lotus is destroyed, there will be some remnant that really belongs to us as a monad and is not inserted helpfully by the solar angel. Those are the two I think we can really build, the soul light and the personal light. I think we're not yet to the point where we can coordinate, maybe we can coordinate the abstract mind a bit, but coordinating the intuition, the buddhi, the pure reason into a vehicle, I think that lies beyond us. And certainly doing anything of that kind in relation to the monad so it no longer can hold us is a task to which the masters can apply themselves. Leo, I am that and that am I, or I am that I am. I mean, God said, what is your name? Moses asked of God, what is your name? I am that I am. It has kind of a circular, enigmatic quality to it, but it is two stages beyond the I am of the personality, and one stage beyond the I am that of the personality, recognizing it is the soul. There is something that you just can't specify. It is a reality. And we just call it that, because at first it appears to be other than what we are, but eventually we identify as that. So we're dealing with three levels here, really. The I am of the personality, the I am that of the personality becoming the soul, and the I am that I am of gathering triadal perception, becoming monadic perception. Virgo, I am the mother and the child, I God, I matter am, is a triple sign. The Father is there too, as God, God the Father. I'm an M. I'm all of those three. Virgo is interesting because it's not only the mother, but as I said, or at least my hypothesis at the moment, is that Father Spirit self-observes, and Mula Prakriti arises out of that observation. So this great being of divinity that works through Virgo finds itself identifying as the major three, the mother, the child, and God the Father. And at first, let matter reign. We'll see that in a minute. And people are captivated, caught up in matter. But there's more to Virgo than that. The mother realizes that it really is the son. The mother gives birth to the son, but then is crowned, ascending, is subsumed by the son. And the one unitary spirit starts it all by seeing itself in articulation. Well, this is a mystery. I try to figure it out, and the mystery of how sight produces an entire range of divine phenomena. I don't see the darkness of matter, which is only that lasting forever. I see it regenerated at every universal opportunity. Libra, I choose the way which leads between the two great lines of force. It's kind of a mantram for the noble middle path, with, in one way of looking at it, matter on one side and spirit on the other, and the soul rises through the opposition. Consciousness is aware that somehow it is both spirit and matter. Another way of looking is that the central channel is that of the spirit itself, being, and that we have in the Ida matter, and the Pingala we have soul, but that which really is the origin and essence of both of them is the central being, the central spirit, which rises and is correlated with the monad. So both are necessary when we're looking at opposites. At a certain stage, both of the opposites are necessary, and this in Libra is understood in a way you can't have one without the other. And we don't say, well, I'm all spirit, or I'm all matter, or even that I'm all soul. We try to take in, harmonize, blend, and fuse all these different aspects. So we have respect for that which karma and dharma force us to confront, and we have respect for the higher energies in which we find a truer and more liberated self as our true identity. With Scorpio, you know, now we really should be looking, and we have, on page 332 and 333 in Esoteric Astrology, where the undeveloped man, the advanced man, and the disciple initiate are shown in their reactions to the zodiacal energies. But now we're pretty well talking about the disciplic reaction. Warrior I am. Sometimes I like to say, am I? I don't know, maybe it's just some training in English literature and in poetry. It seems more euphonious to me and says the same thing, as long as we don't interpret it as a question. Warrior I am, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. So the fighter, conflict with duality. But who is the warrior? It is the soul in incarnation. It is the soul on its own plane. There's always going to be a battle, and under Scorpio, the opposites will always contend, and some projection of the higher of the pairs of opposites will stand between them and have to choose that from which it came, rather than be swallowed up by the lower of the pairs of opposites. So don't we all long to identify as a soul, and not to have our identification captured by the material personal sphere? Don't we all long to be retracted along the emanative stream into that which sent us forth. I guess we have to always lift the lower into the influence by the higher, where its obstructive qualities are neutralized. There's so much illusion, glamour, maya, but when we lift it into the light of Bodhi, in this one instance, it's subjected to Bodhi, and then all of those illusions are dispelled, and remaining glamours are neutralized, and the chaos of the etheric body, the veil of impulsion, where you have all kinds of energies running this way and that, making a mess of things, they are brought into a beautiful order. So we're always going to be torn when we're taking an incarnation in or under this major fourth ray sign, transmitting the fourth ray majorly at this time. And behind the warriors, twixt the light and dark, blazes the light of hierarchy. We face those whose face is as yet darkened, and we try to shed some light on the countenance of those people so they become allies of the Lords of the Shining Countenance and do not fall under the spell of the Lords of the Dark Face, to use the Atlantean terms, which were prominent during the Great Atlantean War. Warrior I am, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. Now, all of these mantras are associated with signs which have their rays at this time, and they have their planetary rulers. So there's a lot of technicalities that go behind the scenes and together make the mantram what it is. Now, another hour has passed, but we'll continue, as I said, I know that the transcribers are overwhelmed at this point. And when they confront a 3-hour program or a 4 or 5-hour program, they just throw up their hands. But I also have to think about my own productivity and the waiting and the waiting for conversions and things of that nature, and try to get as much done as possible, and with gratitude to the transcribers, and appreciation of their reservations when confronted with programs that are too long. So interesting about Sagittarius ruling evolution. That's something that I'm taking in maybe more impressively for the first time. I see the goal, I reach that goal, and then I see another. It is a very forward-moving method. And the arrow which was shot into matter, and there's a returning arrow one day. It goes along the line of the Antikarana, and it is the rising of the being and its consciousness out of areas of denser confinement into areas of lesser confinement, until finally the only confinement that remains is the universal ring pass not. So this is a very progressive sign, and it begins, when we reach that stage in Antikarana building that we call projection. There's a lot of Sagittarius in that, and it's one of the intuitive signs. There has to be a link between the astral body and the intuition. That bridge has to be there during the whole projecting process. And when we're at the mental unit and the retained energies around the mental unit, and when the energies of the different aspects of the soul have been gathered and they're retained within a boundary, ready for projection, and when the lower parts of the personality have risen, there's going to be another arrow shot forth from the bow. That arrow of light, that rapier-like alignment, it's going to have to do with Sagittarius, so that when we are using one of the seven words of power, and let us say, we say, I see the greatest light, we think of the brilliant white light shot across the seven-colored antikarana, which has been emphasizing two colors anyway, that of our soul ray and that of our personality ray. So Sagittarius will arrive at the new state of being. Lost am I in light supernal from Capricorn, and on that light I, and on, I think, what about the word yet? What about yet? It seems that I'm remembering so much of that. Now, I could be wrong, you know. Could be wrong. Yet on that light. So some variation comes in, perhaps. Yet on that light I turn my back. Okay. And yet on that light I turn my back. But here in A Treatise on White Magic, it says, and. Okay. But the contrast is better illustrated by the word yet. In other words, I should love the light supernal coming in from the great seventh ray. I think that's... Wonder if I can find that for us. That's coming in on Dyna 2 and 7th Ray Supernal. 7th Ray Supernal. When the light of the seven rays is blended with that of the 7th ray, a higher ray, obviously, because there are always rays over which we have, which have jurisdiction over lesser septenates of rays, then light supernal can be known. So light supernal is having to do with the manifestation of a great light, which comes through seven lesser instantiations of the rays, of the seven rays. And then, you know, Capricorn is connected with the light supernal, more of the seventh ray comes through Capricorn at this time anyway, then through any other constellation or sign, and then we've got Venus as well that's connected with the beginning of supernal light at the Transfiguration. We might say here that the Transfiguration is the beginning of the expression of supernal light. Well, you might think that you want to stay there because it's so wonderful, so attractive. But then, and yet I hear their cries below, you know. No matter where my vision leads, I hear their plaintive cries below. Okay, that's in the Capricorn solar fire ritual, in the song that is tied to this mantra. So Capricorn is always beset by this great sense of duty, and not just duty to the higher. It's a diamond, you know. There's duty to the lower. And Capricorn, I've even noticed, that it's interesting that you rarely see a Capricorn person, unless other things are modifying it, with the nose turned upward. Maybe with Sagittarius, Gemini, you see that, Cancer, but the nose is turned downward. It's a Saturnian thing. It's the recognition of what's going on in the field of matter and care regarding the duties that must be applied to that lower field. Yet, on that light, I turn my back out of the great sense of duty that I carry. I'm just trying to pivot here just a little bit because I don't know whether this image helps or is a distraction, but makes me feel I'm with you, you know. I turn my back and I descend into the valley, and then we have the symbol of Aquarius, mountain, valley, mountain, valley, mountain, valley. So it's the ongoing question of initiation and descent, initiation and descent. Interesting that Capricorn points downward. Of course, in another way, it's the law of elevation and the law of group progress, the fifth law of the soul. So Capricorn is as much upward as downward, but they do take care of business in the realm of matter. Then, Aquarius, water of life, energy of life, matter of life, not just the water of the astral plane. Water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. So all the energies really come together in Aquarius. It's a sign of universality. And we touch many, many energies and synthesize them and collect them and wisely, cyclically distribute them. It's not just the water of life dump, you know. Wouldn't be service if I took the whole pitcher and just poured it on somebody, would it? It has to be proportional at the right time, according to cycles, right cycles. And, we do realize that Aquarius is that sign which particularly has to do with cycles and with the knowledge of cycles. Maybe that's why these the story has it that many people with Aquarius in their chart prominent turn out to be interested in astrology, open to it, or astrologers, because they're interested in the hidden energies and they know the effect of the hidden energies as causes upon this outer world where effects appear. So water, is matter, but it's energy too. And this particular type of water stimulates the life aspect in everyone that it touches. We have become so familiar with hidden energies. Everything was so opaque, veiled before. Maybe only initiates knew about this. Atoms were hard little balls, and everything was very concrete. But now it's gotten so subtle, and the search in particle physics for different constituents of the atom, which are not the main frequently taught constituents at all, searching for new kinds of particles or aspects venturing into the etheric body. Aquarius is a very etheric sign, and it's ruling our normal etheric plane along with Gemini and the higher cosmic ethers are all very Aquarian. And maybe I would have to say, along with Gemini again, those two air signs are involved with the ethers. Water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. Then Pisces, I leave the Father's home and turning back, I say. It's about the great I monadic being. the monadic pilgrimage. The monad, at least an extension of myself through emanation, leave the monadic plane while leaving part of myself at home. My brother, there was a brother that didn't go forth and a brother who did. Brothers, both brothers of the Father. Well, it's important to stay at home too. And it's important to go forth and then return. So I go on a monadic pilgrimage and I go through the various descents, involutionary descents, and I round the corner in the mineral kingdom. Or, you know, I begin to rise again through the plant, animal, human kingdom of souls, planetary lives. I guess that's far enough, the planetary lives. And I return after a monadic pilgrimage of redemption. Have I learned something? I guess I have. The disciple, finding, redeeming, lifting the red cattle of Geryon, you know, those who are affected only by the desire nature, red, but they're lifted up into higher possibilities in a chalice, which can represent the egoic lotus, sometimes called the chalice, you know, causal body, egoic lotus, chalice. We lift them up into higher possibilities. So one becomes a savior. A savior, one who brings those who are trapped and lost. See, in Capricorn, you're lost in the low. In the high, rather. Lost in the high, and you venture to the low. In Pisces, you're lost in the low, and you venture back to the high. And with great compassion and gathering at every stage those who can be lifted to a higher stage. Well, you know, as I say, you can write a book on every one of these. But we are all residents of the Father's home, even now. We all are monads on our own high plane, even now. And we have multidimensional consciousness, and we have a type of consciousness which is in which the lower is insulated from the higher. And that's part of the task, to bring the higher into the lower and overcome this dimensional ceiling, S-E-A-L-I-N-G, that I've called it in my infinity book. There's a dimensional ceiling. We're aware of what is below, but not of what is higher. And those who are in a higher position, again, are aware of that which is below, but not necessarily of that which is higher. But eventually, it all smooths out and the boundaries are overcome, and we have a seamless connection. It's an elevator. It can stop at all the floors, but it doesn't get stuck at any of them. When it comes to the mantrams of the forms, or what I've called the evolutionary mantrams, the life proceeds in a reverse direction, and the work of nature is the work of nature. Now, that's not an accidental word. You know, probably we better not accuse Master DK of accidental words. He doesn't tend to do that. The realm of nature is very much the realm of the lower 18 subplanes, with the higher three on the mental plane being transitional, in the realm of supernature up there in the cosmic ethers. At least that's one way to interpret it. So I call these evolutionary mantrams. And I'm hoping in the big book commentary, I did a better and more thorough job. You can see that the end is nigh, right? The end of rule 10. Is it like 170 pages or something? Goes to 443 up to 444. And let's just see if I do 270, where are we? Where are we? We're nowhere. Come on now. 270. Let's see. Is there? Has to be. Has been. Aha. I see the problem here, what I did. 270. Okay. And I just want to get rid of that because, well, this is not a perfect text. I have to admit that, you know. And it ends, what did I say, 443 or something like that? Yeah, rule 11, that's rule 11, 445. I know what we'll do. We'll just write rule 10. Rule 10. And we'll go down and we'll see. Here, yes, 271. Well, very definitely, 170 pages or so. And that's astonishing that a rule can have so many pages. But we're getting near the end now. 271, 271 to 443. I'll try to keep that, and even 445. So, from 271 to 445. Well, a little said, the word is a prompting, maybe from the soul, and it is received maybe instinctually. At this stage, nobody's thinking. Not in that early Piscean incarnation, anyway. We say the first incarnation is taken in a group sense in Cancer, but in an individual sense in Pisces. They go forth into matter and get swallowed by the whale, you know, the whale of all these energies, and you can't find your way. But at least take the plunge. Into the lower worlds as a human being, and thereby learn the soul in incarnation within you is learning about all that you might encounter, and your sensitivity will grow over the years. Aquarius, and the word said, let desire inform. Be ruler. There's such a selflessness in the developed Aquarian where you're giving all in service, but here you're desiring all. And you're not just going forth into matter, you're seeing, look at what I might have, what I might possess. These contacts are for me. It's different than the contacts being for others. In other words, you become the man for others in Aquarius, and even more so in Pisces, and you give of everything you have. To those who give all is given. But in early Aquarius, I take the shower of water poured forth, and I turn it upon myself, and all of this is for me. Capricorn, your ego is consolidating in a lower sense, and you want to be number one. You want to be above others and rule others so that you are no longer vulnerable to others and to circumstances. So it's a self-preservation that is occurring. Let ambition rule and the door stand wide, not narrow, okay? The door of initiation is fairly narrow, except when you grasp the hands of your brothers. There's some nice old commentary on that particular act of going through the door which was too narrow for you before, but going through it now, it's a wide door if you are with your brothers and sisters. Okay. Let ambition rule. You see a high goal which puts you in authority and gives you power and reduces your helplessness and your vulnerability. And it's the primrose path in one way, and the door to greater possibilities and greater power stands wide open. With Sagittarius, you're hunting for nourishment. At first, it's simply the hunter, and you need to be sustained. You may later be a gatherer, maybe that hunting, well, gathering is less violent than hunting, but hunting is what the centaur does at first, and shoots his arrow at other forms of life to absorb their energy rather than shooting the arrow above for the return arrow of intuition. So later, maybe the hunter becomes the explorer and learns how to take his own food along with them, and maybe he becomes a bird watcher or, a nature watcher, and maybe his bow and arrow or his gun turn into a camera. All of that can happen. But in the beginning, you have to hunt for a living. I've seen those pictures, it's in the fancy of the artist, but we have the a group of primitive men with whatever they've got as instruments, as weapons, taking down an elephant, taking down a mammoth. What a dangerous task, and maybe how necessary, but it also teaches the group work. There's a Martian quality to this let food be thought, and a Saturnian quality to ambition ruling. And, Aquarius has many planets ruling it, and the first is Uranus, which is a sacred planet, not necessarily easily applied here. But, Neptune is the planet of longing. Neptune has a place in the Aquarian dynamic, but is appearing later as a veiled planet. And, will Jonah swallow the whale or will the whale swallow Jonah? In the beginning, the whale swallows Jonah, and one is just overcome by all those energies which one does not understand. Scorpio, let Maya flourish and deception rule. Here we have a lot of Mercury, which is the planet which lies, as well as later reveals the intuitive truth. And the many aspects of illusion are before us, and we are deceived by them, and we deceive others. Scorpio hides many things and does not bring into the light until later, when in the sequence of meditative stages, it rules illumination. It's so interesting, this sign associated with darkness and death ruling equally in the meditative stages with Taurus ruling the coming of the light. But it is intuitive light, and Scorpio does rule the intuitive plane, but not at this point. This is all about deceiving and being deceived. And promoting the illusion, the Black Lodge came along with a kind of Capricorn and Scorpio tendency in the negative sense, and they fed desire and promoted desire and curtailed freedom and made slaves out of people. I mean, all of those are potentials of Scorpio and Capricorn. I mean, when you have power over people, I was just thinking, I mean, every once in a while, something about World War II comes across my screen, you know, having somehow more and more felt some kind of participation in that. And I saw some of these dictators, you know, and influenced as they were by Capricorn. Hitler with the Capricorn moon. I think Goering was a Capricorn, maybe not as bad, says the Tibetan. Who was it again? Tojo, Capricorn, infamous warlord, you know. There was another one I just had in mind, but it just slipped. My friend Philip Lindsay did an analysis of some of the major Nazi leaders and found how many of them had Earth signs and even Capricorn moon. Hardness is there. So you put people down, you make slaves of them. Well, you know, when you look at Stalin, he has that Capricorn look. Somehow he seems to be born in the last degree of Sagittarius, but there's something going on there that relates to Capricorn. I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was born in the first degree of Capricorn. He has the look. The old saying is, if a person doesn't look like their horoscope, well, you don't send them to a plastic surgeon, but you certainly change the horoscope. Well, so there's a lot of cruelty when you get the combination of Capricorn and Scorpio. And I guess one of the cruelest people in modern history is this Count Vlad, the Impaler, as they called him. Well, you just can't even discuss such a person. But again, it appears that Capricorn and Scorpio are found together, deceiving, enslaving, murdering, you know, the consciousness. So those two signs, which are so prominent in getting a person into hierarchy, are also interestingly used by the Black Lodge to destroy their possibilities. With Libra, a point of balance has been made, been achieved, and you wake up to the fact that you have a mind and you can go one way or another. Now, this is an ascending series of choices, and we're not talking about the sixth initiation here, although I do believe that Libra is involved in that, sort of deciding which path upon which you continue your evolution as a monad. But even early on, Libra stands in the center and has to decide which way they will go. And for a long time, and for people like ourselves, it's, do we move closer to the soul or do we fall back into a more material sphere? But we're just learning about Saturn's work as a choice maker here. Now, some people choose not to choose and they simply stay in that ambiguous state, which is neither spiritual nor strictly material. And some of the early qualities of Libra have to do with fiery passion. I think, you know, you go to esoteric astrology, and we go to page, let's say, 333, and we see unbalanced fiery passion and human love. But it's kind of hard to relate that directly to let choice be made unless we're talking about choosing, you know, which partners to partner with. Virgo, at first a very material sign. And the word said, let matter reign. And so for a long time, Virgo people are very captivated by the garment of God, we might call it. Virgo doesn't bring in the fifth ray, but it brings in a material attitude in the early days, and especially as it did appear in the previous solar system ruling the last part of the previous solar system, and more under, I think, under ray 3 and ray 7 than is now the case transmitting ray 2 and ray 6. So, you know, you just get involved in all kinds of petty little things and frankly don't see the forest for the trees. So many trees, the forest doesn't appear. And there was a man who had a certain glamour, and I can't remember what it was, but he was a prominent fifth ray type, but it's like the glamour of preoccupation or the glamour of preoccupation with the material inconsequential or non-essential. And you do see that engrossment in material detail among many Virgos. And of course, some of these things we carry with us as we move forward into our higher spiritual possibilities. We don't necessarily get rid of them all so fast. They can be vestigial. They can remain with us, just the way the rays of previous times remain with us. I mean, you know, you can't be a first or second ray soul until the first initiation is more or less in sight. So you've, let's say for the second ray, you've been on ray 6 or ray 4, or maybe, who knows, as in the case of the Christ, maybe on both of them. Sequentially. Well, you're going to still have those characteristics in first ray types. The seventh ray seems related to the first ray, and when you change or elevate your rays off the seventh, it goes to the first, maybe under special circumstances to the third, as when Master R was involved in moving his ashram onto the third ray. But there's a lot of power people who really carry, like for millions of years, that tendency towards strict organization. So one's previous activities under a different ray, which led to the ray that one is now functioning upon, create a conditioning which is evident. When it comes to Leo, let other forms exist. Okay, I rule. They do exist, but one does not respect them particularly. One has always to be number one. And I dominate these other forms. Well, maybe it's a way of increasing your own potentials and developing your own abilities as a ruler. But of course, it's extremely separative. And Leo bringing in the fifth ray and the first ray, both of those rays have very separative potentials, especially in the early days, before three minds are uniting and before the sense of synthesis on the first ray is taking over. So there's no question about who's in the dominant position here. It is the I, the little I, and the relationship to other people is exactly that, seeking how you can dominate them. And maybe some of that, as I say, carried through even when you're working on I am that and that I am. Cancer, let isolation be the rule, and yet the crowd exists. Well, you know, you're walled off within that shell. I'm very concerned with your inner process, and the you haven't had too many shell crushings yet, perhaps, that have made you sensitive. But people are not governed by individual streams of thought. They're governed more by emotional and instinctual impulses, which are shared in common, and thus the crowd, thus the mass consciousness, which is shared by all, because they are not individual thinkers. They don't even think yet. I mean, maybe they're much more involved with the irrational aspect of man, the emotional and the dense physical. And yet they can't really contact the other in any deep way. Can't really know the identity of the other. They don't even know the identity of themselves. They all share a certain tribalism under cancer, and everybody has to be somewhat uniform or be thrown out or killed or something. So there is an aggregating of people together, but they don't have intimate relations. Psychologically, they are isolated. Yeah. The Gemini, there's not too much to say about it. And the word said, let instability do its work. And that's carried over to, you do find the flighty Geminis, or when they're, that sign is prominent. But there's no settled position. And the work is to acquaint the perceiver with many different situations and qualities. So you become aware of what's going on around you, the environment, You see all the different things that are happening. You don't yet put it all together in your understanding, but at least you've encountered it. So the encountering of the many, and later it has to be organized either under higher Gemini or under other signs. But don't expect constancy and don't expect endurance. And is it true that Gemini is the sign also of cowardice? Its color is yellow. Is it so? But later you can imagine the pillars of the mysteries are ruled by Gemini, and it takes anything but cowardice to pass through those pillars and endure. Let instability do its work. There's always the factor of movement. It is the third sign after all. There are different ways to look at the rays, but also according to the number of the sign, you can tell something about the sign. When it comes to Taurus, it does bring in a lot of fourth ray. There is the whole instinctual nature that is struggling to express itself. Let struggle be undismayed. It's a peculiar form of words. It's like the struggle does persist. It's not prevented. It's not countered. It's simply violently, instinctually presses for its own gratification, satisfaction. This is a sign of gratification and satisfaction. And one struggles to make sure that the instinctual nature can express. One owns, one takes, one is proud, one dominates. And does anybody see this struggle? Well, maybe more so than in Scorpio, where many things can be hidden for a long time. But the conflict eventually approaches the light, and in the light, unification is seen and understood, and this frictional approach ends. And then one becomes a great beacon of the light. You don't find this struggle Well, maybe in a way you do. I was thinking about the Buddha, not in his teaching to people. You don't find the struggle, but you do when he was confronting the hosts of Mara. But this is too early for that. Later, the great light that he is and was confronted the scorpionic Mara. And all the flourishing of illusion and Maya, all of that was seen through because of the great light. But as I say, for these types of mantras, we're not there yet. The instinctual nature is simply struggling for expression. And when it comes to Aries, in the beginning, let form again be sought. It's a little different from go forth into matter. A difference between form and matter. Form is the design, and matter is that which fills in the design, the aggregation, the constituents, which solidify the form. So it's time to start the wheel again and to look for those forms which will satisfy the personal urges. Are there any, really? Eventually satiation comes, and there is no true satisfaction and no form within the lower 18 subplanes, at least, is sought. Maybe the formless forms later will be sought, but not the ones that are evanescent, impermanent, transient, and in the lower worlds. No, those will not be sought any longer. But at first, you still have hopes that somehow, if you find the right form, you will be gratified and the purpose for your living, will be manifest and you will be happy, So that clockwise wheel is ready to start all over again. And we've been on the clockwise wheel a long time. It has to do with the directions that energy flows take within your own energy system, within your own chakra system. And they reverse, At first, the higher energies can go straight through the impact of extrapersonal, transpersonal energies can go right through your higher chakras and anchor in the lower. But later, there is stimulation of the higher centers by those extra systemic energies outside your system, outside the solar system sometimes, and the lower energies are caused to reverse and rise into and re-stimulate and add to the higher chakras, which are already being stimulated, and the lower chakras arrive at a stage where they can sustain themselves, but where they are not the center of attention. So it's the reversal of the wheel. And when we look at these two lists of mantras, there is one in which the wheel is not reversed, and one in which the wheel is reversing, and is maybe when the mantra can be carried out fully, reversed. So that's just a little run through these mantras. I have no idea what I said before, and maybe something is added here to what has been said. So one just has to find the page on which these mantras are listed in the Esoteric Astrology book, and probably they're also listed at the end of every chapter. And if one has the time or interest, then to compare them with what may have been mentioned here. It will be noted, says the Tibetan, that all these ideas concern the work of energy in some form or another. And in the last grouping, with the work of the so-called unregenerate selfish individual full of desire and satisfaction, but even he as has the energy, even the lower being has the seed of achievement, because essentially he is that being. So even he has the seed of improvement, and these are, I call them evolutionary mantrams. They are mantrams of the form doing what the form must do, or the form being guided in a certain way to do what will lead later to eventual release. The group of mantric words used by the aspirant in the power of his own soul are positive. So basically, yeah, if we go through these sort of negative mantrams, we get tired of them and we turn them around, we reverse the wheel. I guess that's the point I was trying to make. We reverse the energy currents in our body. And of course, it doesn't happen overnight. And there are those transition periods, just as difficult. We're in a transition period now between Pisces and Aquarius. And when you're at that stage between the phases when the lower chakras capture the majority of energy, and the later stage when the higher chakras capture the majority of energy, and you're right between, there's going to be turbulence and turmoil. Humanity is probably there right now. So the unregenerate, selfish individual will regenerate and will rise, and the later mantrams will be his also. It seems needless to deal further with the various types of force, and we shall now turn our attention to Rule 11. What we have done, you know, he's talked about the force of the planetary logos or energy, the force or energy of the planetary entity. Then he's talked about all of these ambient energies, which are so multitudinous, and they are impinging upon the disciple, and we have to handle all three. Okay, well, Rule 11, and it's about 60 pages long. I just don't know how long that will take. But let's just see. I'm going to end this program here. And let's see how we do. And where we are. 4:43 and 4:45. Okay, let's see how we do. Right, and here, this is the end. Okay. And if I were to go to page 444, what would I find in a treatise on white magic? Is a good place to go. Okay, 444, treatise on white magic. Oh, goodness, what's going on there? We should be able to do that. No hits. Let's try 445. Something went wrong in the transmission, and it does seem that we do have a 445 and no 444. Okay, Well, we'll just let that be. So, looking at how we conclude this, this has been number 53. It takes us from 437 to 445. And it is rule 10, and it is the 37th program on that. And we're no longer on rule 10. We're going to start rule 11. I thought it would never end. 170 pages. And this is the 13th, and we begin on 445. Okay. I think that should do it. And oh yes, we start with program number 54 in general, and there's one more rule for rules of magic for the astral plane, or rules for magic on the astral plane, and we're ready to go. Well, friends, and I know this picture is totally useless now. There's so much sun in this room. We're dealing with as deep a presentation of the wisdom as Master DK and his superiors thought possible at this time. We have no idea how they will judge the elevation of consciousness between the last writing in 1949 and the writing to come in 2025, approximately 75 years, approximately. I mean, we don't know, maybe the contact will be made with whomever will be the amanuensis, if that's the way it's going to work. And then we don't know when the books will be published. Will it be an early book published, or will, again, people be drawn into an esoteric school of some kind and offered lesson sets, which later will be collected into a book? But we do have the promise, the assertion, that a new installment, the third installment, is on its way. And our duty, or at least I consider it an important part of my orientation, is to look at what has been given through Blavatsky, but especially now through Alice Bailey, and try to make as much of a synthesis of that gift as may be possible. Now, there's no way we're going to absorb all that has been given. He told us, I have given you more than you can ever absorb. Well, that's almost like an understatement. You begin to read, and your estimated percentage of absorption goes down and down and down. If I used to think maybe I'd absorb 5%, maybe I'm down to 2% or 1%, you know? Main ideas, yes, perhaps, but many, many details still wanting of absorption and still more wanting of application. So in this era of the forerunner from 1965 to 2025, we have a few years remaining. No use. The sun's going to blot me out here. We have a few years remaining, only a few years. And we're called upon, just like the hierarchy in a way, they're learning all about Shambhala and moving steadily towards the external plane to appear to humanity, work with humanity openly, so as to prepare for their role in the actual reappearance of the Christ. He's not going to appear before the hierarchy has located itself in the five major centers, has begun to gather its initiates and disciples around the masters there positioned, and has begun to relate to those in those major centers and to be appreciated as offering good counsel and light by those in power in those major centers, only then will the Christ be in a position really to appear. Only when there has been that measure of sharing and the measure of peace and the measure of house cleaning, and also when the masters have done their work. So you can understand that the masters will be involved in helping with the peace and with the sharing and with the house cleaning, and they will be respected. Now, right now, it's not even believed that they exist. So how long do we have? Well, we know we have, I think we have at least 100 years to the year 2117 at least, because that's when the true age of Aquarius will begin. And the vernal equinox will be aligned with the 30th degree. I said something, I think, incorrect the other day. The vernal equinox is starting at the, what can I say? Let's just say that tropically we start at the beginning of the sign, but we regress, and the very first alignment of the vernal equinox with the new constellation occurs toward at the end of the constellation involved. So if it's the day of spring and it's the first day of tropical spring and we're beginning a new age, that vernal equinox, that day of spring, is aligned with the last degree of the sign into which we are entering, and that would be Aquarius. They don't line up degree for degree. If I gave that kind of idea, I was incorrect, or I had lost my mind for a short period of time. Okay, well, friends, now I may make this available to you on YouTube. You know, on YouTube we have quite a bit, and even you know, somewhere in the mid 40s, we have that many programs on A Treatise on White Magic, and also to a degree on Makara. And now we have one more 60-page rule, and then we'll be finished with the rules for the astral plane. How will we assimilate? We will meditate, we will study, and we will apply, and we will work it out within our own mind and psyche. Not just take it as kind of an add-on from a superior source, but actually work at understanding and work at applying. And then we will assimilate. Okay. Thank you. Lots of love, many blessings, and on to Rule 11 after 53 programs. See you soon.